This is Gary Wakefield, and you're listening to Queer Life Stories.
My name is Francine Jakes, and I'm 78 years old, and I identify as female. I was actually born in Hobart in 1941, and I grew up most of my life in Hobart until 1958, when I joined the military and left Tasmania to return in 1980. I was the only boy in the family. I had four sisters, so I was under the influence of females, if you like, all that time. There was no males in our family, except my father, of course.
So was he there a lot, or?
He was there, but he sort of never interacted with me. I sort of lived a lot on my own, socially, not physically. You know, I still lived in the house, but because I was a male, I was supposed to go out and do all the outside things, whereas the girls stayed in the house and did housework and all that sort of the feminine duties, if you like.
How did you feel about that growing up?
Well, how it was organised, it actually gave me a lot of freedom to go out and do what I wanted to do myself. You know, I sort of studied a lot. I went to Hobart High, which was the academic high school in that time. So whether you did maths and languages and the sort of academic type subjects as opposed to the technical college. So it didn't sort of faze me at that stage. I was quite okay with it. I always knew there was something not right or kosher, if you want to use that word. But I never understood actually what it was and what was driving the difference that I could see. So I sort of just went along with the flow and sort of just accepted that I wasn't quite the same as everybody else and just let it run at that. I was always sexually driven, if you like. I can never remember a time when I didn't have a girlfriend. If I lost one, I would quickly look and get another one. I always had females in my life, if you like. You know, I was very active that way. Yeah. Always, all my life I've been like that. And that actually started in about grade one. I can even remember the name of the girl. No, I won't say that on here, of course, but yeah.
We'll protect their identity.
Yes, I actually met her when she was quite when she was in about her 30s, I suppose, and she remembered, and so did I. Okay. In 1979, I had a vasectomy. When I came to out of the anaesthetic, I said to myself, I don't have to prove I'm a male anymore. And that was like a light bulb moment as far as I was concerned. So I was then on the way. I was sort of edging around it, but sort of I was not specific at that stage. I hadn't sort of come up with anything concrete. But after I'd had the vasectomy, I knew what I wanted to do. I started off at a very minor level, if you like, and it gradually accelerated and got a more important part of my life as it progressed. Well, the thing was, in the 80s, I was actually working in Queenstown. I was the head of the electrical department in the TAFE College. I used to go to work as a boy, and I would work all day, and when I came home, I would be a girl, and I would live as a girl in the house all night, and I'd get up in the morning, dress as a boy and go to work, and that's how I lived. And it was awful, it really was. But it actually got worse, it got worse and worse, so that was a real struggle. And the funniest thing was, I never ever got caught out.
Did people have any suspicions? Were you never questioned?
Not as far as I know. They could have, but nobody ever said anything to me, and I never seen any signals that they thought of. We used to have girls come down from the high school, and I used to teach them electronics, and that was the best classes I ever had.
Did you have relationships while you were living that double life?
The politically correct answer is no.
Okay.
But you notice the word political. Politically correct. I'll leave it at that. God. It's very difficult.
Yep. I can only imagine how difficult it must have been.
It was.
What were your coping mechanisms? How did you survive it?
Well, I survived because at that stage, due to lack of education, I thought I was the only person in the world like it. I had no one to turn to, no one to help. So I sort of did the best I could within myself to survive. If it happened to me now, with the knowledge that I have, it would be a completely different story. But in those days, the education wasn't there because the internet wasn't up, you couldn't look things up, and social networking wasn't as it is now. So it was very difficult to connect with other people and in other scenes to actually find out things that you wanted to know.
Start to discover that you weren't the only one?
About 10 years ago, I suppose.
Wow.
Yeah, but I still didn't know anybody that I could go to for help. I sort of knew of the existence, and that was about it. And I did a lot of research on the subject. And I saw an ad I was looking up about sexual health once on the internet, and down the bottom of the page there was a tiny little ad for working it out, and a phone number, and the address in Launceston. I actually went to Launceston twice and they were shut, because it was during the week and they're only open on Fridays. So I rang up and got the facilitator, it was Claire, and I found out then that she'll be there on Friday, so I turned up on Friday. The first meeting I just went along more as an observer, if you like. I didn't put in a lot of input. The second time I went, Claire said to me, "And what will we call you?" And I, at that stage, I'd never thought of a name. I was more interested in myself as a person rather than how I presented to somebody else. And I sat there for a minute and all of a sudden I just said, "Francine." And I am so glad that that name picked me, because I think it's perfect. And Claire was talking to me, and she was the first person ever to address me as Francine. And the counsellor was in the room, Victoria her name was at the time, and she said, "You should have seen the look on your face when Claire addressed you as Francine." And I'll never forget that moment, ever.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really was. The name that just had come out of the blue.
Going into that first meeting, not knowing what to expect, what was going through your head?
I had an open mind. I sort of had an idea of what working it out by the name, or what they were about, So I had a very open mind as to what I would get out of it, out of the meeting, and what sort of function they really served, as opposed to just working it out off their name, using their nomenclature. Yeah, so. And that was really worthwhile, because I look at it this way, that working it out actually saved my life. Because there was a meeting later, another couple of meetings on, there was another trans girl there, Lani, her name was, and she told me about Clinic 34, and I didn't even know it existed. So after we finished the drop-in, her and I sat there and we talked for a while, and she explained to me about sexual health, Tasmania's Sexual Health Clinic 34. So I left working it out in Brisbane Street, and I went straight to Howell Street and made my first appointment. And that was the start of the big change and the big things in my life. I've been on HRT for, officially on HRT for about 13 months now.
Yep.
And the changes have been magic. The biggest thing that's helped me with HRT is that my testosterone level is so low you can't measure it. So my body was just yelling out for estrogen. So as soon as I got onto the estrogen, I wear patches because of my age, my body reacted 90 miles an hour. The changes were phenomenal. They really were. And so quick. Even my endocrinologist, she said to react as quick as I have was very unusual, the changes. And I'm very pleased. I could not be more pleased. Once I knew what I could do and how I could do it, mentally I blossomed, one way to say. And I've never felt so happy and confident in myself ever in what I do now. The changes were, physical changes were, some were rather quick, you know, with breast development started straight away. The rest of the physical developments were a bit slower. There's some mood swings, but not to a great deal. And that was about what the patches did, because I started off with a fairly low dose, 50 micrograms, and then I went to 75, and now I'm on 100, which is the maximum dose I'll let you have. But it worked well, and I didn't have to take an anti-androgen, which also helped, which causes all sorts of problems with people. So there was no spironolactone, and I was really pleased about that, I can tell you. I had to come out to my partner because years and years ago, because I worked away all the time, I only came home a weekend. So I used to have some clothes in the house that I could wear at night. I used to wear nighties to bed because we have separate bedrooms. And I used to always hide my nighties under the blankets in the bed when I made the bed in the morning. One day I was a bit lazy and there was a bit of a lump in the bed where I'd folded the nightie up, and she came in to smooth the bed out and she found this lump. She put her hand down and she found my nightie. And I was in the kitchen washing up at the time and she came out holding this nightie up and said, "Oh, you're nothing but a crossdresser." And I agreed with her, but that was the moment I should have told her. It was a moment that I missed. And I've regretted that always. So instead of putting the problem to rest, to bed, if you like, I just let it fester, if you like. No, so I didn't help myself at all in that case. That was the problem. So I was still trying to be a girl without her knowing at the time. Because when I used to go out, I kept a wardrobe of girl clothes in the boot of the car. So I would stop at the side of the road and I would change into a girl and go and do my doctor's appointments or shopping. And on the way home, I'd stop in the lay-by and change back into a boy and go home as a boy. The real thing about that was I never got found out either, and I used to be in public as a girl, but I must have been a pretty horrible looking girl in those times because I had a very limited wardrobe, very limited makeup, and short back and sides. So I don't know. Nobody ever said anything, nobody ever queried it. It's very strange. I think back on it now and I think, oh God, how did I ever do it? You know, I would. But it was the only option I had, so it was either take that or do nothing, and do nothing was not an option. Never crossed my mind at all. It got to the stage where my physical shape couldn't hide anymore. So we were in the garden one day, so I called her in. We sat down on the patio and I said, I've got something to tell you. She said, oh, yeah, okay. So she sat down and I just told her. I said, I'm a girl. I'm not who you're married to. And the first thing she said was, it's not your fault. And then she said, I won't leave you. So and all the fears that I had that she would stamp her feet and throw a tantrum and throw me out or throw herself out, never happened, never eventuated. And for that, I'll be forever thankful. It sort of made it so much easier just to continue with my transition. And then she said, all those boys' clothes you've got, you'll never wear them again. Let's get rid of them. So they all went to Vinnie's. Bag after bag after bag of them. It was amazing. Yeah. So I've got the only boys' clothes I've got a sweatshirt and a pair of track pants that I wear when I'm gardening in the winter. And that's it. Because I never had any male underwear anyway, because I used to always wear female underwear. But when I come out, I could actually put it in the laundry basket, whereas before I had to wash it myself. Yeah, so just these little things that all make differences. I identify as a girl and nothing else all the time. I go and have my eyebrows done and my hair done, and as far as they're all concerned, I'm a girl. Simple as that. I go into the supermarket and they all treat me like a girl. And the pharmacy does, the medical. The first people that recognised me as a girl was Medicare. When I changed my name, I went in and I wanted to change the name on my Medicare certificate, and the girl was typing it up and I said, what's the sex marker you've got on your file? And she turned the screen to me and pointed to a big F. And that was the first, and that was the government. That was amazing. I could have kissed her, but I didn't. Thought it wouldn't look proper.
So when we talked earlier, you said that you were the second person in Tasmania?
Yes, Martine Delaney was the first and I was the second, right behind her. And that was the 5th of September 2019. That was 105 days after the law was passed and the royal assent went out that day. So I was there, I drove to Hobart and got there in the morning and did it and cried when it came out. When the law was actually passed in Parliament, before it went for royal assent, I cried for half a day in joy. I was just so happy. I never realised how important it was to me until that law was passed. And that was really a marker in my life, if you like. And then when I got the new birth certificate that says gender, female, that was the day. That was the day I was born. That's how I look at it. That's right, that's the day I officially came into existence.
Family support?
Yes. My granddaughter's gay, so in the family she was the first person I came out to. because I knew she'd understand, of course. And she looked after the rest of the family, told them first, so I didn't have to struggle to try and explain to them. And they were all fine about it. They were all accepting, and I've had no drama. They're all over in Adelaide, and I've been over twice this year to visit them and see them all. And there's been no drama at all. It's really good. I haven't had any bad vibes from anybody. I had one person on the internet, well, I'm very active on Facebook and Messenger, and I had one person who put a comment on some post that I made and said, oh, it's just a granddad who likes dressing up as a girl. So I wrote back to him and said, I hope you're not talking about me, I'm a transgender woman. And the post disappeared. He took it down, so, and that's the only bad, not nasty, but bad comment that I've actually had. I will say on the record that I haven't been misgendered for ages, but when you first start to transition, it happens quite often because most of the people around you knew you as your previous life. So misgendering is quite common, but it is so hurtful. And somebody using your wrong pronouns, which is really a form of misgendering anyway, it is really hurtful. And if I got misgendered now, I would be very upset about it. Because my partner always calls me by my name, by Francine, and refers to me as she, or she does this and she does that, usually when she's talking to her daughter. So if she can accept it and get it right, I think everybody else should too. Because I don't present as a male at all, not in my mind anyway. And that's all that matters. It's what I think, because I'm happy. And everybody else, I'm not affecting them, so. Yeah, it's funny though, but some things are strange, like the first time I used female facilities. You know, you sort of, it's a bit trepidation, I suppose, but you do it once, nobody notices, so it doesn't bother me now. And the best thing is, of course, that I'm legally female, so there's really no bother at all now.
What are they
going
to do about it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. That's right. Affirmations are nice. I was actually asked the other by a woman in the supermarket, how did I handle menopause? And I thought, what an unrelated affirmation that is. You know, that someone would think that I was feminine enough to go through menopause. I thought that was marvellous. And I've told everybody I know that little story. That was really good. Another time I was asked, I was in the doctor's surgery and we were talking about health and that. And the woman I was talking to said, and how's the health of your husband? So, yeah, similar things, little things like that. That means so much, even singularly or collectively, they all add up to a positive affirmation. And that is, to me, that's important, that people recognise me for who I am and for what I am. And that means so much.
What's next for you?
On the 21st of January, I go into the hospital for surgery, having a bilateral breast augmentation. I know what size they're going to be. I've held them in my hand, the implants. And that's the next big thing in my life. I just can't wait. And it's, from the day of this recording, it's about 4 weeks I have to wait. Yeah. The surgeon comes back from Christmas holidays on the 14th, a Tuesday, and the following Tuesday, I meet him in the dark room. Yes, that's exciting. And it's been so quick that I've been able to actually organise that. Because my endocrinologist said I was ready, but if I wanted to do it, and I said, sure do. So we did the referral. And I did the first interview, and I went back last week and did the pre-op. No, this week, did the pre-op. Got measured for the surgical bra and took the before pictures for the before and afters. All good things. My life is marvellous. It really, really is. I'm so glad to be alive. Well, my philosophy is I try to be as visible, as highly visible as I can. Because of my age, I think I'm fairly immune to being troubled by it. Because I always think that the more that I talk about it and talk to people and relate to it, the more people will understand what we are and where we come from. And they will realise that we exist, whereas there are some dinosaurs around that reckon we don't. But I think the biggest problem is education, simple as that. And now I'm talking about ordinary lay people and also professionals like doctors and specialists. They are all lacking in the general knowledge and understanding of where we're coming from and who we actually are on the whole. There are some out there, of course, who are okay with it, that know everything, but you know, my GP didn't, and I had a bit of a talk with my specialist, my haematologist, and he was a bit vague about it too, and he's a professor, so. You know, there's definitely room for a lack of education and improvement. I had a trans girl that I talked to in Hobart, I won't say her name, when I first started to transition. And we talked about coming out and being visible in public. And she said, nobody notices. So I went out the first time and I looked around and no, nobody notices it. So the fear that people will see you and pick on you, it's an unreal fear. You go out and nobody notices, simple as that. And that was the best bit of advice that I had for a while. Sort of, that helped me sort of expose myself, if you like, to the real world. And now I do it all the time. And I don't care. I think that the main thing really is education and understanding. You know, there are certain groups who come out with these horrible statements about things that we do and what we are and you know what we shouldn't be allowed to do. And they don't really understand that we're just normal people. You know, physically I might be a little bit different, but mentally I'm exactly the same as any cis girl. So I can't see where the problem comes from. They come up with all these ideas of fears about, you know, trans girls, what they'll get up to and what they'll do in women's places and that. It's a load of rubbish, it really is. You know, it's very exaggerated and narrow-minded, and I can't think of any other words to describe it, actually, and it's just so bad. But hopefully, given time, education and exposure of us, that they will engender a better understanding of what we're about and where we're coming from eventually. It mightn't be in my lifetime, but eventually it will happen. I'm convinced of that.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
I'll leave it there. Thank you so much.
That's okay. I have enjoyed just sitting here talking, because I'll talk about it all day and I'll talk to anybody about it that wants to listen.
If you are struggling with your own mental health, please contact Lifeline on 131114 or Beyond Blue on 1300 224636. Both services are available 24/7. If you would like to tell your story, share your experiences, or would just like to get in touch, email us at queerlifestories@outlook.com, or you can find us on social media, Facebook and Instagram. Just search for Queer Life Stories. This podcast is a no-budget, one-man operation to produce, but you can support this podcast by donating or subscribing to us at Patreon. That's patreon.com/queerlifestories. If you're listening in Tasmania and would like support regarding your sexuality, gender or intersex status, contact Working It Out on 6231 1200 or find them on Facebook. Q Life provide anonymous and free LGBT peer support and referral for people across Australia wanting to talk about sexuality, gender identity, relationships and more. They're available 3pm to midnight every day on 1800 184 527, or you can web chat with them at qlife.org.au. You can hear future episodes of Queer Life Stories on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Please follow, subscribe, rate, review, and share. This will be the last episode for 2019. Thank you to everyone who has shared their stories this year, and to everyone who has been listening, leaving comments, and getting in touch. There has been a fantastic response, and I really appreciate it. Over the next few weeks, I will still be talking to people and recording their stories so that I can bring you some new ones in January. I will be in Hobart on December 27th, in Melbourne from January 9th through to the 11th, and in Adelaide from the 12th to the 14th. If you're in these areas on those dates and would like to tell your story, please get in touch. Have a fantastic Christmas if you celebrate it, and we will be back in the new year. Thank you for listening. Take care of yourself and each other.